It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
What do you think I had in mind for the cold open? Oh, shit! I knew I had a second open ready. It was about video game John Barry.
Oh, no. Oh, well.
Hello, everybody. Oh, Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world. I mean, Jay-Z told me he likes it, too. Whatever. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 451.
And it is a part two. So when last we left, William was dangling off a cliff by two fingers, and I was stomping on him as hard as I could. But he was determined to hold on. Anyway, I pull him up, and he's fine. Let's go on with the show. Don't you hate those ones? That always drives me crazy, where it's like a cliffhanger, and then it's just like instantly. There was some show that did that on the regular. And it wasn't like a comedy or a satire or anything, but it would end on like a cliffhanger. And then the next episode would resolve that cliffhanger in like 3 minutes. And the plot of the next episode would have nothing to do with that anymore.
I mean, the original cliffhangers in film serials pretty much did that. I mean, you're getting back to the originals when you do that.
There was some show that they kept doing that, and because that's an old technique. In a lot of shows, especially a lot of like Canadian genre fiction stuff, does that at the season finale. Mm. I remember shows where they wrap up that season's arc, and then literally in the last like 10 minutes, they introduce like six new twists and cliffhangers. And almost always, all of them get resolved within the first few minutes of the season premiere of the next season.
Yeah. But a lot of times when it's somebody
hanging off a cliff, I understand. You're either going to pull him up or he's going to fall down. We're not going to have three episodes of him hanging on the cliff unless we're like Dragon Ball Z. But there's other things where like, oh, actually, you're forbidden from doing whatever. Or, oh, actually, your blood is evil or whatever. And then the start of the next season, they're like, here, take this injection. Now you're fine.
Well, sometimes when they, like you were saying, introduce a whole bunch of other stuff when there's a cliffhanger, they resolve it quickly, but you have set up the arc for the new season with new characters and whatever. Yeah, so you've at least done that.
But even far too often, it's not that, because they don't know what the next season's going to be yet.
Right.
So what happens is they're like, okay, 10 minutes to resolve all that bullshit. Now we're going to introduce this arc.
Yeah, do something completely different. Yeah, that's happened. That's really annoying when that happens.
Well, because that's also the thing nowadays. You have to leave a cliffhanger on your TV show in case you get another season. Often you don't know if you will. Frequently you don't. But you got to do that just in case, so that people will want to come back for the next season. Which is why I have started doing this thing where sometimes if a show's been going for a while and I'm kind of starting to feel the end of it and it hits a point that is a nice resolution, I'm like, that's where the show's going to end for me.
Justified City Primeval had a cliffhanger. And I can tell you right now, because I saw a lot of the criticisms of the show from people who were fans of the original. If this cliffhanger setup had just been how the original pilot started and how the whole season was going to go, people would have been more excited about it. So it was weird. They had this cliffhanger that was like, oh, this looks like it's going in the direction of the previous material. Why didn't they just do this? Why did they just put this at the end as a cliffhanger for the next season? They could have just done this for the season and maybe people would have liked it. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking.
Weird. I used to be, and I'm still susceptible to this, and I think a lot of people are. But I used to watch a lot of anime or anime type shows when I was younger. And a common thing they would put in is they were very formulaic because they were kids shows. But at a certain point, they'd be like, okay, people are going to get bored. We have to create a new thing. And frequently it was whatever your magic powers are or whatever are failing because we have this new villain. So then you have to learn these other magic powers. But then they would do it over and over and over and over and over again. And the big one for me is, as I've talked about many times, I was very into Power Rangers when it first came out. I was right at that sort of sweet age for that. And Power Rangers did that constantly. They had to get new Zords and new powers and new abilities and new vehicles. And it was always Swiss. Oh, there's this new villain. Oh, there's this new thing. And eventually I was like, they're not doing this because it makes good narrative sense. They're doing it because it keeps you hooked.
Like, oh, well, and it advertises new toys too.
Yeah, yeah. Sailor Moon was another one. I really thought I was into Sailor Moon, and then eventually I'm like, oh no, they're just like, here, we're gonna invent a new thing. And in a lot of cases it's so abstract, it's like this villain's more powerful, you're just gonna have to watch him wipe out all the bad guys. Why? Don't know. His powers happen to do that. So yeah, I as I get older, I am much more aware and much more cautious about, is this giving me twists and cliffhangers not because it's a good story, but because they want me to keep coming back?
Yeah.
We call
that's J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. He had a big TED talk and everything about a mystery box that he purchased years ago that he never opened. And that should have been a clue to everybody. It's right? Like, because what he was arguing was, if you have a mystery, people are going to be interested and fascinated. But that was it to him. That's like, that's all you need. You never have to, it never has to pay off. You never have to open it. But yes, you do. If you, maybe you're satisfied with that, J.J. Abrams, but nobody else in the world is. You can start with the mystery box. That's great. Genius. But you have to open it or else people are going to be disappointed. I mean,
but he's I'm never not opened sure it's everybody. Box. I think you and I are in that. I mean, you and I are solid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure everyone is, though, because the amount of things, it's a horror movie trope, but it's becoming a more than horror movie trope and just a movie trope. That your continuity and your canon doesn't have to last more than that movie.
Yeah, I guess.
Because it used to be just in horror movies. Every horror movie, the villain is defeated and then comes back the next time. And sometimes comes back without, like, some series have tried to come up with a way, like the villain was reincarnated or brought back to life or whatever. Sometimes, no, they're just there. It's like, didn't they get killed last time? Yeah, no, no, no. And the really fun ones is the method of destroying them isn't the same every time. Just recently, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Freddy is defeated by showing him his own reflection in a mirror. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, same main character. Freddy Krueger comes back. Discussion of mirrors never mentioned. And I mean, I couldn't swear to this, but it does take place in our world. So I'm pretty sure they were mirrors.
I've seen things like this before where, like you said, something will work and then the person will come back. They try the same thing again and the villain will say something even like, you think that's going to work on me again? Well, yeah.
But see, that's putting in the effort. Most of them just don't even fucking mention it.
But why wouldn't it work again? I mean,
it's every single Final Destination, the way to defeat death is different every single time, even though they are ostensibly all taking place in the same universe. Sometimes, like the Leprechaun movies, which are terrible for a variety of reasons, they every movie the Leprechaun has a different weakness that can defeat him, and it's different every time. But to be fair, I do not believe there are any recurring characters or recurring plot points in the Leprechaun series between movies. So you could think of them as a different multiverse of each one. But it's becoming a thing. Fast and Furious, MCU, a bunch of movies where it's like, we already established how this works, and now you're pretending that's not how it works. The MCU is a great example. How many different groups control the entire world? They all do it, and yet nobody's heard of any of them, including the other groups. And also, how many the Thor Love and Thunder, terrible movie, has a MacGuffin wherein if you do the thing and get the thing and send in the box tops, you get one wish. That would have been way easier for Thanos than collecting the Infinity Stone. Way easier. You just had to go to a place and do a thing. Like, it's so much easier. Didn't come up. And that's setting aside the thing that we constantly struggle with. We're like, why didn't this superhero show up to this movie? It's like, well, because this isn't their movie. But there's a limit to what I'm willing to forgive. And you and I are both very big on story and mythology and lore and continuity.
Yeah.
And it just makes it really hard.
I mean, most of the time, I just don't think it's too much to ask. Right? Like, in Justified, the original Justified, sometimes they would cheat on things to make scenes happen. And I said that a lot, like a lot of shows do. But the thing is, it's so well written in other ways. And I can think of a way where they could have made this happen or made this work, and they couldn't think of that.
I think TV and movies get more of a pass on that, and it drives me a little bit crazy. And don't get me wrong, you can tell me there are things where it's like, the plot's not supposed to make sense or whatever. And there's a lot of things you can excuse. I still need coherence. Now, if you tell me up front, this is all weird and uncertain, and it's not necessarily going to make narrative sense, that's fine. My brain will invent my own.
Yeah, right. Me too.
And then I don't get mad about, like, I don't accuse them of breaking the rules of what my brain came up with. But right. I will do that. Like, oh, it's a dreamlike thing or whatever. I will invent things, and that is my takeaway from it, and that is fine. But in other ones, when you do Ant-Man, if you go to the trouble of explaining the science to me, it more should than once. Be science that makes at least a tiny bit of sense.
And then it should be consistent. Yeah.
When you tell me a wizard did it, fine. And actually, Friday the 13th, or not Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street gets away with a lot because there's a lot of what's a dream and what's not. And you can paper over a lot of things that way. But it still has some pretty explicitly contradictory stuff in it. But again, that's old horror movie things, but it seems to be expanding to lots of other things now. Don't like it. If you're joining us for the first time, go back an episode. I'll explain how the episodes work in that, because this is a two-parter. So deal with that.
Well, is it like soap operas, though? Because I never liked soap operas for a variety of reasons, but I knew some people who did, and I started to understand that the people that I knew who watched soap operas did not care if there was consistency, if something made sense or whatever. There was like a game that the writers for the soap operas were playing with the viewers. Like, you know, we've been writing this soap opera for 30 years. What can we do that's really going to surprise you? It doesn't have to make sense. It just has to be something that you didn't see coming and that maybe you'll appreciate just for the novelty and humor of it. I mean, all the people I knew, it was like a game. And when I would point out, this doesn't make any sense, they'd say, it's not about that. You know, when suddenly I can't even think of a good example because I never watched these things, but I was watching with somebody and something really absurd and ridiculous. I mean, I think someone in a gorilla suit was even in this soap opera or something. And I thought, what, you like this? And they said, it's funny. You know, you can talk about it. You can guess what's going to happen. And here's the thing. What I realized was, to the viewers, there's kind of an art to it. to surprising the viewer, where you can do something unexpected that's like unimpressive and doesn't do anything, or you can do something unexpected that breaks continuity, it's ridiculous and everything else, but it's entertaining. How do you do that? How do you find that thing that nobody's gonna think it's good plot or good anything, but it's entertaining, versus someone does something that nobody expects, but it's not entertaining? How do you figure that out? I mean, I can't figure it out. I didn't know how the writers of
Lucas.
I didn't know how the writers of soap operas were doing it, but the audiences were entertained for sure.
Soap operas are the epitome of what I was talking about. This whole, we're going to throw a new twist, we're going to throw a new cliffhanger every single time. And you want to see, and this is the thing, because I watched soap operas from an incredibly young age. Yeah. My mom watched them and I was at home with her and I watched them. I was watching Young and the Restless when I was a toddler. And as I got older, I still kind of watched them, but eventually, you know, I had to go to school or whatever. And I realized something. If I watched a soap opera and then skipped like 2 or 3 days, when I came back, I would be completely lost.
Yeah.
If I watched a soap opera and skipped 6 months, when I came back, I was fine.
Yep.
I mean, I might have occasionally like, oh, that's a new person. Okay. I'll figure out who they are from context clues, but that's it. But like, if it was just in the short term, everything goes crazy. In the long term. Yeah. And yeah, no, they'll throw up. I mean, there's constant betrayals, twins, secret pregnancies, secret marriages, amnesia, secret murders, robots, Satan, ventriloquist puppets coming to life, all sorts of fake chemicals and things that have different effects when ingested. Plastic surgery.
So then I started to think, you know, so another thing that was sometimes on my TV at home besides soap operas, because mom and grandma watched them, and when they watched them, I did not actually, because I just didn't like them. But sometimes wrestling was on television.
His mom and his grandma, he didn't like them, so he didn't watch
the shows. No, the shows. Professional wrestling would be on TV, and I didn't like that either, so I didn't watch it. But as time went on, I thought, this is just a soap opera too. I mean, this is the same thing, really. Just,
oh yeah.
Just back in my day, men mostly watched more the wrestling. Athletics. Yeah, men mostly watched the wrestling and women mostly watched soap operas back then. But by the time I was in college, as many of the soap opera watchers that I knew were men as women. I mean,
melodrama has its power. And this is the place where all of this comes into conflict for me is Doctor Who. Doctor Who has absolutely atrocious continuity. And it also has such a deep and broad lore that it's frankly insane how bad its continuity is. And some of this is what we all forget. At its heart, Doctor Who's meant to be a children's show. That was how it originated. But also it's just a melodrama. And I have had to learn to appreciate that I'm watching it for the characters and for this episode's adventure. And even then, it sometimes is hard when there's something too blatant, when I'm like, no, but no, you can't, every once in a while. But by and large, I've had to train myself to appreciate Doctor Who for certain things and not get annoyed by this huge continuity.
Right. Just, but then constantly. For a lot of that, you just start to realize that some of this isn't science fiction. It's just fantasy packaged in a different thing. Even Star Trek. I mean, a lot of people want to say, oh, Star Trek's the hard science fiction. No, it's not. No, it isn't. The transporter is based on technology that's literally impossible.
Do you know why people think Star Trek is hard science?
I don't know.
It's the scientists' fault.
Because they all say, Star Trek when I was a kid, now I'm a scientist.
Grew up with Star Trek and then made that shit real.
Yeah.
People assume it goes sort of both ways.
Some of it real. It's mostly...
We still don't have transport.
Most of it is as ridiculous as anything in Star Wars or Doctor Who or anything else. Yeah. These, if you're going to, it depends on how you define science fiction. You can define it however you like. But if you define science fiction as fiction that's built around science and reasonable what ifs, Star Wars, Star Trek, and Doctor Who would not even fit into the category if you defined it that narrowly. Yeah. And it's, you know, and that's fine, and but
it becomes a thing. The bullshit things can become, how do I put this? There are science fiction technobabble bullshit things that came from Star Trek that are absolute bullshit, but that are now accepted concepts within sci-fi as a whole. Actually, the best example of this is literally everything any of us who have no connection to law enforcement believe is true about police procedure. I've talked about this before. TV show police procedurals, by and large, have consistent rules across shows and networks and decades. And most of it is not true. Most of it is not the actual law, but we are so used to it in these TV shows that that's normal now. It's the same thing when people talk about tachyons and how they go backwards in time and all that shit. I'm like, for a while I thought, oh, that's interesting. But then I found out, no, that's the thing Star Trek made up based on some real random bullshit people came up with. But now that's a thing that'll show up at all sorts of places. Asimov has a ton of them. They kept talking about one of my favorite series, Becky Chambers, the series that I love there. I don't, the Wayfarer Chronicles, it might be called, I don't remember. Talk about the SIB and contacting people on the SIB. And I didn't know what it was. I figured out from context, but I didn't know. And I looked it up and it's short for Ansible, which is an old faster than light communication thing that either Asimov or Ursula Le Guin invented that people just liked. And it's shown up in a bunch of other unrelated sci-fi. And now it's just a given. Things like warp drive, hyperspace, that kind of stuff is just normal. And I can accept that as long as I'm aware that's what's going on. And again, as long as there's some consistency in the rules.
Well, right. And also sometimes you've got to do things like if you want your setting to be like a galactic empire or something, like, well, Asimov, the reason he had his story in the context of a galactic empire,
because I'm hot. Let me know if it makes the sound.
Okay. The reason he set his stories in the context of a galactic empire and a galactic whatever is because he wanted a metaphor, really, analogy maybe is a better word for Earth's history and how empires emerge, evolve, and fall and things like that. He wanted to tell that story. Well, okay, you want that setting, you're going to have a way for people to get around. And so then you're going to have to invent things that might actually be impossible. Fine. But they are impossible, a lot of them. And once you allow that impossible thing, yes, a lot of other things sneak in. And pretty soon it really isn't science fiction anymore. Not hard science fiction anyway. It's more fantasy. It's just set in space.
But if it's science fantasy, and you try and explain, like, I will give Star Wars one bit of credit. Star Wars has never tried to explain anything in remotely accurate science terms. There is a technological continuity within Star Wars of certain things. This made up dookie nonsense does this, and then this happens, and that is fine. And sometimes that's not consistent, which whatever. But they don't try and use real science. As you do that, I'm like, no, I don't know science very well. And I know that doesn't work.
Well, the thing about Star Wars, they were the first ones to do this and to show that it could be done was there's a part of telling stories like this and that are on galactic scales or whatever, that isn't about being scientific or true to science or any of that. It's just about being authentic to the viewer. Right. The viewer sees it feels real and true. That's what Star Wars really brought to cinematic science fiction was didn't matter if it was informed by science or had anything to do with science. Somehow you as a viewer in the you know, near the middle of the 20th century could see what was up on the screen and believe it. Believe that was a spaceship. Believe that was from another planet. Believe that's, it's crazy, because why would you believe that? You've never experienced this before. But that's the key, is to convince the viewer that they're seeing something that makes sense. And somehow, all these years later, even after technology has changed so much for us, the viewers, technology's changed so much for us, somehow Star Wars still pulls it off. Even the old Star Wars still pulls it off. And you're like, yeah, that looks like a future time or place or whatever.
And one of the dumbest things about Star Wars has proven to be the most useful. When Knights of the Old Republic came out, everybody was like, this is thousands of years earlier. How come all the shit's the same? And their answer was basically, well, in Star Wars world, technology has advanced so much, it basically can't go any further. Which is, on its face, the dumbest shit ever. That's not how technology works.
Not usually.
That's not how society works. That's not how anything works. No. But, to its credit, and I have by no means an exhaustive knowledge, but, as far as I know, there has never been a Star Wars plot line that was about a technological breakthrough.
No.
There were Star Wars plot lines about discovering a new plant or a new species on some planet that had ramifications, but never like, oh, I figured out how to do this thing with, you know.
Like, not a new way to communicate, not a new way to.
Yeah. Not a faster than hyperdrive or
anything. No, not really.
Yeah. No. Which is good.
Yeah.
It worked well for them.
Yeah, nothing's really dated because of that.
Because at that point, you have to be like, okay, so this new thing, what changed? How does it work? What is, like, and Star Wars gets away with never having to do that.
Well, I mean, they could introduce something in Star Wars now that you could totally believe has been around in Star Wars the whole time. You just haven't seen it yet.
They right? have, like, often.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if they wanted someone to be using augmented reality or whatever, you wouldn't think, oh, this is new to the Star Wars universe. You'd just think, oh, I hadn't seen someone use that yet. So,
well, and especially if you make a setting that is so broad and so diverse, well, supposedly so diverse, then you can do any new thing and just be like, yeah, you've never been out of the billions of inhabited planets in the Star Wars galaxy. You just haven't been to one that does this. I mean, that's constantly happening. I mean, I was playing Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order or whatever, and we found a brand new ancient civilization that did all sorts of cool shit with the Force that we'd never heard of before, and they were wiped out centuries ago. And you can do that constantly, because this is a big galaxy.
But I mean, think about how early Star Wars stuff, they had these little round things. You push a button in a hologram of the person you're talking to. You can talk to that person.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's basically people using their cell phones to
also, and yet they get way shittier reception.
Yeah. Well, some of it's clear across space. It's set, what do you want?
Long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, they never figured out the Palm Pilot. Sucks to be them.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to look at Star Wars and to think, you know, you can watch the very first one. If you can find a version that's not even enhanced, and it'll only seem dated because of maybe people's hairstyles, maybe.
And just, maybe, yeah, they're occasionally, if you are paying real close attention, you can find things, and just, you know, an absence of CG.
Right.
Which is huge.
But the general, what Ralph McQuarrie came up with is the base design and all of that with it. And the other people who brought that to life, it's stood the test, you know, and new people come along and add their little their spin to it, but it you feel a visual and aesthetic and a really visceral consistency, and it's pretty amazing that they've been able to do that.
There is one exception.
What's that?
It's actually a few places where you can then extrapolate. I mean, I've sent you things where, based on what happens here and what happens here, if you extrapolate in between, there's some really fucked up stuff about Star Wars, which you can have in any suit. I've sent you how they turn droids into droids can feel pain in the original trilogy and not in the prequels, and what does that mean and stuff like that. But the one that still just holds out forever, first movie, New Hope. Although originally I believe it was just called Star Wars, but whatever. Mos Eisley Cantina. They walk in there and the bartender points at the droids and says, "We don't serve your kind here." And that's nonsense on a couple different levels. Although recent Mandalorian has actually eliminated one of the nonsenses. Droids can go to bars and you know, get intoxicated.
Yeah, there's a thing.
Electrical things or whatever.
Yeah,
so it is fair to say we do not have those facilities here for a droid. But droids are incredibly common. They're everywhere. Some people don't like them, but like, they are widely socially accepted. They are ubiquitous. Why the fuck would you not allow them in your bar?
I don't know.
We have wasted so much time. We've even talked about fucking Justified yet again. I have so much to go through, and we have a question to go through. So let's do this. All right. We got some business. Okay. I saw a movie. Not the Barbie movie. A different movie. Trish and I saw it for the first time. Neither of us had seen it before. Face Off.
Oh, yeah. You told me you saw it.
Because you sent me a weird meme about it the next day.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what a weird synchronicity that was. It's a good meme, though.
It's ridiculous. The 90s were weird, dude.
Oh, they were. They really were.
Oh, man. I don't know. It's exactly what you think it is. Like, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's 100% what you think it is. The messaging in it is insane, even for an action movie. It is really fascinating to watch John Travolta try and play Nick Cage and watch Nick Cage try and play John Travolta. It is again, like, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, and maybe a little bit of Raising Arizona if you're old enough. That is where we get our image of Nicolas Cage. All of those movies encompass what we all think of as Nicolas Cage. I still think The Rock was the birth of that kind of
maybe
movie,
a little Moonstruck too, I think. Maybe a little.
I mean, he was good in that, but it didn't feel that Nicolas Cagey. Actually, I was going to say a little bit of Leaving Las Vegas, but I was a very big fan of that movie. But it's a very different movie. But it's very interesting. He does fine with his Travolta part. Travolta does a surprisingly good Nicolas Cage. And what cracked me up is he frequently does this, where he holds out his arms, John Travolta does. And Trish was like, "What the fuck?" And I was like, "No, Nicolas Cage holds his arms out like he's Jesus all the time in every fucking movie. I don't know why, but it's a Nick Cage-ism. So just hold your arms like that. He does it all the damn time." Also, didn't know that this is the movie where I Could Eat a Peach for Hours comes from. That's the big iconic Nicolas Cage line that this one has that. The Rock has the thing about Zeus's butthole. And Con Air has put the bunny back in the box. But yeah, so that was, it's also a surprisingly long movie. It's over 2 hours.
I don't remember.
Surprised me, but yeah, it's a lot of something. It's and the ending is just really, and also they go to more length than I realized to try and explain the technology. And it absolutely Ant-Mans them. Like, if they hadn't done it, whatever, but like they explain, well, this part is done this way, and this part is done this way, and this part is done this way. And I'm like, yeah, what about this part, and this part? You didn't mention though. Like, if we're gonna draw attention to it, a lot of other stuff didn't make sense either. But yeah, this is a hell of a flick. All right, I have one other thing, and then we do Jazz's email. It's my other bad decision.
Was Face Off your first bad decision?
No, my first bad decision was responding to YouTube surveys. This is another thing that I have no reason to do. I knew I didn't want to do it, and I'm doing it.
Okay.
And you may have noticed this. Your wife may have caught on to this, or you may have if you watch her play video games. So I installed Fallout 4 again.
Oh, you did?
I did. For those of you who don't know, Fallout 4 is, by a very healthy margin, the game I have put the most hours ever into.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I have put over 16 days into Fallout 4. I have put well over 400 hours into it. Just on my last playthrough, I put over 300 hours into it. And I did all of the things. So why? Why am I doing it again?
You were looking for something, you said. You didn't have to pay for it.
I was. But there's another reason. Because there is one thing I never got to do.
Oh, really?
It's something you have to do up front. I was always very curious about this. So, Fallout 4, I'm going to try and help people because some people who listen don't really play video games. So I'm going to, because this is very narrative, about the narrative. And y'all know how stories work. So the Fallout series as a whole is a post-apocalyptic series, presuming that essentially the 1950s continued up until 2077. And then there was a giant nuclear war and everybody died. And this company made all these little vaults underground where people could survive for the time in between. And all the Fallout games are you're a person in one of those vaults, and it's time for you to come out into the world and do stuff in this post-apocalyptic future. Fallout 4 in particular is you are somebody with a spouse and a kid, a baby, little baby, and you get put into one of these vaults that is actually just cryogenic suspension. So you go into the vault and they stick you in a thing and you freeze over. You wake up long enough at an unspecified time to see people come in, kidnap your baby, and kill your spouse. And then you are frozen over again. And then you wake up again later, and you get out, and you go out in the world, and you find out it's been 211 years, and you're like, I gotta go fucking find my baby. And that's the plot of the game, is you go fucking find your baby. So, it's been a little bit tricky when I played the first time because I'm playing a mother looking for her child, and yet I stopped to do these like side quests and things like that all the time. But whatever, it's fine. So I played the game, and they released a bunch of DLC because it's a very popular game. It's still kind of a popular game. And the last DLC they did was a thing basically that took place in an abandoned theme park. And the premise is you basically get tricked into going to that theme park, and the theme park is being run by bandits and raiders, and they've taken over the place, and you are in this gauntlet because they like to just fuck with people and kill them for fun, and you've been tricked into this gauntlet, and then due to circumstances you actually win and defeat the overboss of everything, and that means you're the new overboss, but you did it through shenanigans, so you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And then the game is you're now the head of this giant theme park, full of all of these rival gangs, and you have to try and find a way to keep them together and make them happy again. Or, and that's the main plot line, is build it up and make it cool again, and now the Raiders will be awesome and we'll make money and people will be afraid of us. That's actually the main thing. Unlike a lot of games, the bad ending where you're like a shithead is the main one. There is an alternate one you can get where they're like, if you kill all the bad guys, those of us who are enslaved here can just run things, and won't that be nice instead? And you can do that. Because it's the last DLC, it felt very weird to me because I had played largely as a good person. And so it was weird to be doing these bad person stuff. But it came out late enough that I sort of was done with the game. So I'm like, this is its own thing, whatever. But at the time when it came out, I read online somewhere, somebody was like, you know, it would be a cool way to play this. You come out and find out it's 211 years. And basically your character loses their shit and just runs off, ends up in this theme park, and becomes an evil leader of raiders and like wipes things out. And this thing, part of that is you have to send raiders out to like take over settlements and everything. And these are settlements that I built myself. So I really didn't want to like send people out to fucking destroy them.
Right.
But they're like, no, you go in the beginning and you basically go nuts and you become this evil despot or whatever, and you wipe out things. And then you realize the error of your ways. You redeem yourself, you wipe out the raiders, and then you go on the main quest of the story. And I remember at the time thinking, that's actually a cool narrative. Too bad I've already played it for hundreds of hours.
So now but
it was
doing
a neat
this.
Idea. And it worked well in my mind, and it made more sense. And the problem, so this is what I'm doing.
Okay.
I started the game. I'm immediately going there.
Okay.
The problem with this,
you don't have very much stuff and power. I mean,
it is highly recommended you do not go to that part of the game until you are at least level 30.
Oh my gosh. That's going to take a long time without building any settlements or doing anything.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, it will. And it turns it into a fuck it, the kind of game I hate, which is a game where I die over and over again in the same spot until I have to figure it out. So, but in my head, like, this is an advanced area. You're going to get more XP. You're going to level up way faster.
I guess.
Which I think is sort of true.
Yeah,
it's not right. Super true, though.
Oh, okay.
Because I've been playing it for quite a bit now. It took me a long time to just get past that gauntlet thing. I died a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Because I was like level 2 when I was doing it. Like every this, like in many games, if you see a bad guy that is way high, too high level for you to deal with, there's like a skull next to it. That's a common video game thing they do. Everybody's got a skull for me in this game. Everybody.
Okay, well, if you've gone crazy, why don't you fight your way to the thing first and get some XP? Can't you kill all kinds of other things on the way?
Not really.
Oh.
Because it's actually not that far.
Oh, okay.
And I very intentionally don't want to run into any plot
stuff. Yes, right.
So that was a thing I had to avoid. And also, when you get the place you go to, because it's a separate map. So the place you go to this transit station, and then it takes you to separate map. Well, that transit station has some bad guys there. And I had forgotten this because I played it when I was level 60 something or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And just took them out, no problem. When you're level 1, those guys suck. I basically... Well, I died many, 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 many times. And the way I got around it eventually was basically running like hell to the door to get downstairs, because most of them won't follow you through a door because it's a loading screen and everything. A couple still were. And one time somebody didn't, I died instantly. But after doing that 2 or 3 times, I got to where only one guy followed me. And I just kept pulling the trigger on my gun over and over, and he died. Thank goodness. But I was not super worried, because once you get to the part where you're now the overboss, there's not a lot of combat right then. It's a lot of exploration and a lot of talking to people, and you get XP for these things. So I was like, I'll level up. You don't level up super fast. And while there is a lot of cool like gear and supplies and stuff there in greater quantity, because they figure by that point it doesn't matter as much, it's still not as much as you would hope. I have no power armor. That would help immensely. I have pieces that if I had a frame, I could put them on, but I don't got a frame.
Well, there's a settlement near there. Can you not build on it right away? There's a...
I don't know. Because again, to me, that's sort of the main plot. I didn't want to fuck
with that. Oh, okay.
Also... So I'm doing this stuff, and I finished most of it, and now it's the part where I'm supposed to go out and take back the different parts of the park. And I'm like, those were kind of hard when I played it the first time. And for the record, I have this set on the absolute lowest difficulty.
Yeah, right.
Already.
Yeah.
So it should be a walk in the park. And I'm like, I don't know.
No pun intended.
But there's these like side missions that the gang leaders will send you on. So I do those. And those are just random radial missions out in the full map of the main game.
Oh.
You know, the map I haven't explored at all.
Right.
So I ran across the world to go to a place and kill a dude. And now I'm supposed to run across the world to do a different, like, it's, I'm only up to like level 9.
Wow.
It's tough, but I am enjoying it by and large. And also, I am very, this is the reason I'm doing it. I am role playing at this time.
Yeah, right.
Very deliberate. I am making decisions that I know are not good because that is what my character would do in that situation. And I am trying to find, I'm trying to basically do a 50s housewife who had a nervous breakdown. And like at first she was like, this is crazy, I don't want to do this. And now she's getting into it where she like fucking threatens gang leaders who sass her and shit like that, like right out of the gate. Yeah. And tells the fucking enslaved people to shut up and get back to work. Like she is on a power trip right now. The one real downside is the entire game has one barber in it. And it's in a place that I'm nowhere near because it's into the plot line. I don't want to go there right now. So I am wearing some really weird shit sometimes. I'm putting on like Raider gear and stuff like that. Now I'm doing for like what's the best gear, but I look kind of badass. I still have the little 50s housewife flip do, and I'm never going to get rid of it through this whole saga. And it feels very strange. Because that was my thing. I was like, she's going to shave her head. She's probably going to be fake. Like, she's going to go full native, as it were. It's very interesting. I assume I will get bored of it soon. Because there's a lot of... And even now, like, I still have to collect a lot of things to try and, like, upgrade my gear. I have no settlements, but I still need stuff to, like, upgrade my weapons and all that. And that's already feeling kind of tedious. So we'll see how long this lasts. But it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiment you're doing there.
And I think it makes a way better narrative. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Give us the email. I've heard there are several questions in one.
It's from Jazz.
Hello, Jazz. You might be the only listener now.
She says, I have not yet seen Barbie.
He's right over
this
there.
This was
crap. I just told William he's the last person in the world to see it. Now you haven't seen it either.
This is as of August 16th. That's some time ago when she said that.
She's probably seen it.
But did recently read a deconstructive analysis of it published in The Guardian. If you haven't seen Barbie yet, you can save the questions directly related to Barbie for later. But I also had a couple of general questions related to something the author said. So tackle these in whatever order most makes sense, but I think you'll need to do just one set of questions and have the other set for later. I mean, we can just answer.
What do you think? I've seen it and you are not concerned with Barbie spoilers.
No, because I
know most things about it.
I mean, I didn't read this Guardian article, but I've read things and watched things that are similar. For whatever reason, I didn't care about spoilers with it. So I just wanted to know.
Yeah, I will defer to your judgment.
Okay.
As to so how to read this.
One general question. The author uses the phrase patriarchy, scion, capitalism. Now, it does seem to me that the way capitalism has evolved in our culture is definitely interconnected to patriarchy. For instance, the idea that women from the working class should stay home and do unpaid work that freed up the time for their husbands meant that there were more labor hours available to capitalists. More labor hours, i.e. profit, available to capitalists. So one possible discussion point slash question is thinking about how these two things, capitalism and patriarchy, are currently related. But then a second question I got to thinking about is, are they necessarily related? Increasing the division of labor benefits capitalism, so does capitalism necessarily connect to hierarchies based on social categories of gender and race? So that's the question. Question, that's the first question. The second question are Barbie questions slash discussion points. Here are the various points the author raises about the movie, which lead him to conclude that the message in the movie is not as feminist as some believe. A, Gosling's performance, a supposed parody of chauvinism, comes across as charming. Masculinity is not seen as toxic, but beguiling. B, patriarchy is represented as bumbling, inept, and easily overcome. That's interesting. C, unlike Ken, Barbie is portrayed as perfect. D, America Ferrera's speech represents real hardships women face, which contradicts the Barbie message that you can be anything. And E, male domination is overcome by feminine wiles. Mm. And that's it. That's the whole post. That's right. The whole post. a lot of stuff.
I wanna hit that first one. I don't know why. And it probably means I haven't given it enough thought, given I've given it 30 seconds of thought. I very, very sort of strongly and immediately believe patriarchy and capitalism are connected, but I do not think remotely necessarily so. In a very simple sense, both of them are methods of gaining power. And one can use the other as a tool to gain more power. But to me, they are not necessarily tied into them. You can have capitalism without patriarchy, and you can have patriarchy without capitalism. But both are about finding ways to consolidate the influence and power and wealth to a certain group. And in this instance, the reason capitalism and patriarchy are largely interconnected at this point is because the people with the economic power are largely the men. And so one hits the other over and over again. I do not consider, I cannot think of anything about capitalism or patriarchy that uniquely requires the other. Can you? I was asking the listener, not you. I don't care what you have to say.
Okay.
Go to the blog and tell me. All right. You might as well give me your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, so from a sociological standpoint, there's a hierarchy. What we're dealing with here is society working at scales where there's a hierarchy. There kind of has to be at that scale. And the hierarchy can, if it wants to, it can just basically oppress whoever's at the bottom of it. You can oppress them just by nature of them being at the bottom. There doesn't have to be a group disproportionately represented down there. That's just something a culture comes up with. Culture comes up with a reason to say non-white people should be down there or women should be down there.
But it's about privilege and underprivileged or unprivileged. It's about haves and have-nots.
Right, right. It's you. If there's going to be someone at the top, there's going to be someone at the bottom. There doesn't have to be any kind of specific group down there unless the culture makes that happen for some reason. And Western culture has a lot, there's a lot of reasons that Western culture has traditionally been sort of down on women and down on non-white people. And so naturally, all of the incentives are for male white people because of that cultural stuff. And so then you get this thing happening. But it doesn't have to be that way. It could be the opposite. It could just be, we could just have a culture where everybody's equally represented at the bottom and the top, and we hate the people at the bottom just because they're at the bottom. You know, we don't feel like we have to make up some reason they're at the bottom, like they're genetically inferior. I mean, that's really what it comes down to with race and sex, is we're thinking, we're trying to justify to ourselves why certain people are down there or deserve to be down there. But we don't have to have that justification. We can just say, well, they're down there because they deserve it. Full stop. It doesn't matter what sex, gender, color, whatever shape, size they are. But in Western culture, we have, for whatever reason, wanted to explain why some people are naturally fit for the top and naturally fit for the bottom. So we find things that people are born with to use as a thing to blame, like their skin color, yep, or their sex. And so there you go.
Or their family's wealth.
Their what?
Their family's relative wealth.
Yeah, right. So there's, you know, we can use all kinds of reasons to stack it or not. Or just, like I said, we could just hate people at the bottom because they're at the bottom. But we in the West like to have a rationale, and it's, yeah, usually some genetic rationale. And that's why we get to where we've gotten.
So last week, AKA an hour ago, I was talking about Shang Wang's stand-up. He has a bit in it where he's talking about these friends he plays basketball with, and they're a very diverse group of people. And he's talking about, if he ever was going to do a bank heist, these are the people he would use. And he talks about the different people and the various skills that they have. And all of the people, like, there's one who's a black dude, he's Asian, of course. There's one who's a Mexican guy. There's one who's Salvadoran. I don't remember. But there are, and then he gets to this one. He's like, and then there's this such and such guy. He has no technical skills, no appreciable technical skills, but he's white. He has powers I don't fully understand. So I think he's going to be a very important part of his team. And I was like, yep, that tracks.
It does kind of. I mean, whiteness immediately. Is
definitely enough to put him on the team.
I mean, I can immediately think of things that he can do just because of that the other ones can't. That's amazing. But even
when,
today, that's
when
true.
When I was working really hard to not listen to all the stuff you were saying, I did realize something that's going to make me change what I said. One could argue, I still maintain patriarchy and capitalism do not have to be related. However, one could make a fairly strong argument that capitalism and patriarchy as cultural artifacts within our culture now were invented in tandem.
Well, I would say this.
Because
I would,
private property and inheritance necessitated control over women's reproductive rights.
Right, right. So let me say that about patriarchy specifically. Even though in theory, I stand by everything I said before, it's not a coincidence that we have patriarchy, or that a lot of other places do, because large scale hierarchies need to control two things. Two things are very important for these hierarchies to control: food and babies. And sometimes both of those things mean controlling
the babies. We'd be fine.
Sometimes both of those things mean controlling women, because for a lot of societies, women actually produce most of the food. So you end
up in the form of babies. Eat those babies.
So controlling women becomes, for a lot of societies that start to get empire scale, and they're developing hierarchies, and they're putting in their methods of control, it's not there's a reason that women get targeted pretty early and pretty severely. Now, race is a whole other thing. The race stuff as we know it today is fairly recent. And before that, yep, there might have been other race things, but even that was a little different. So
I would argue that racism came out of capitalism in a certain way, because I've got my whole economic situation, and then I see people who in theory I might have to share with, but they look different. Let's say that that's a reason I don't have to share with them.
Sure. Right. So I think there are reasons that it's happened to women over thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And there are reasons it's happened to non-white people over hundreds of years, but it's because things took a particular historical course, and it didn't have to happen that way, but it was all but inevitable for it to happen that way when you look at how things worked. So yes, you can understand how it happened that way, but I still think it didn't have to happen that way, but you can see, probably going to happen.
In fact, if we could just do inheritance lines matrilineally, make a lot of things easier, because you had to really control the woman so that nobody else's sperm could get to her. Cause how would you know, and then it might not be your kid and all this. Whereas if it was just on the matrilineal lines, like if it popped out of her, it's the heir.
Well, right. I mean, obviously all of that stuff was created so that you would know,
way easier,
so that the man would know who
exactly
who the kid way belonged to. We already knew who the,
and
which
actually,
woman the kid belonged to. We already knew that. It was the man we
older,
had to
consider. Largely wiped out cultures did that kind of thing. But all right. I want to knock out those Barbie ones fast. I'm confident. But we should, at this point, now that we've gotten deep into this and specified how society is and why it is, we should do our usual disclaimer of we are two middle-aged white guys who are kept in a luxurious economic lifestyle and who both have bachelor's degrees in social science that we have done nothing with. So take that with as much salt as all of that.
I have. I'm getting a master's degree.
No.
I'm still doing stuff with my
No. First, at this point, you're not doing anything. You're just prepping to do things. And I learned master's degrees don't give a shit what your bachelor's degree is in.
Well, mine
once
kind
you
of
are
goes
out there and therapizing, then we can do the disclaimer differently. But for this point, you are just as shitty and useless a white guy as us. You are working to better yourself. I will give you that. But so far, you're not better. You're still terrible.
I mean,
but he's working on it, people. Someday he'll be able to tell us about the Barbie movie, and we'll be able to take it with way more authority than we can now.
Well, I didn't say that.
Not least of which is because he hasn't seen it.
I didn't say that. I just said I've been using my degree. That's all I said.
Yes, and I'm just saying no. You're planning to use your degree any second now. I freely admit I'm not planning to use mine.
What?
You want it? I'll give it to you. I'll be honest. I don't know where it is.
What do you have to say about this?
I spilled a giant pitcher of iced tea on it the day after I graduated, and then I don't remember where it is since then. I think it was in my parents' house, which became my sister's house for a while. I probably own it. It's probably on this property. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Do them again. Give me the Barbie questions one at a time. I'm going to answer them.
So there's five of them. Here we go. Gosling's performance, a supposed parody of chauvinism, comes across as charming. Masculinity is not seen as toxic, but as beguiling.
I would argue, doesn't it come across as charming, per se? It does come across as overly sensitive and petty and petulant, which I think is an accurate thing in this. I think there is a definite phenomenon wherein men act that way because they feel threatened by women. And sometimes they feel threatened by women in power. Sometimes they feel threatened by the concept of women potentially coming to power. And they act like Ryan Gosling act. We run into some continuity issues with the movie in that Margot Robbie's character is not considered perfect. She's actually considered deeply flawed, but she is considered deeply flawed because apparently that's the power of the real world playing with the toys. You start to get the things from the person who plays with the toys. And at no point do we discuss that phenomenon as it relates to Ken toys. Ostensibly, the same process should happen. So ostensibly, personality issues related to Ken's should be the same process wherein it's something that came from the influence of the real world person playing with the toy. But we don't even address the concept of people playing with Ken toys and that having it. So that is a continuity issue. In general, though, I don't know. I mean, I definitely didn't find Ryan Gosling charming when he was, you know, taking over Barbie Land. He seemed kind of shitty in a funny way, but he seemed pretty fucking toxic. The metaphor also falls apart, though, because it is a tried and true thing that Ken dolls are an afterthought to the world of Mattel's Barbie. And there isn't a real world equivalent. Women aren't the Kens of the real world.
Right.
So you can't do it exactly. But I will admit, it, there is some hiccups there. But I don't know how much you could fix that. Sorry. Number two. Or sorry, unless you have things to say. You didn't see the movie, but that's never stopped you before.
Well, I just... My understanding of the whole Ken thing is what you were just saying, which they in Barbie world, the Kens exist in a way that... at least men have never existed as being these like useless appendages, so to speak. I mean, and if there's any way you can say that that's applied to women, it's in a, you know, when they were, didn't have careers, were just supposed to, you know, sort of be decoration for the men. Mm-hmm. And so here the Kens are decorations basically for the Barbies. And he gets, what happens is when he goes to the real world, he sees that, oh, it, in the real world, it's completely different. Which means his arc isn't necessarily about real masculinity or anything, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure
which is,
that it...
Which is where the feminist message begins to fizz a little bit. Where it starts to unravel a little bit. By the end of the movie, it's not nearly as much of a feminist message. But that's the beginning of where... the metaphor starts to break down and therefore right. The message a little
so,
bit. But.
So it says, so as I understand it, the story says something about the patriarchy, but it doesn't necessarily say anything about masculinity, at least not through the Kens, because yeah. They don't represent yeah. masculinity ever. They represent Kens.
Yes. Also, sorry. And I have another point, but I think it'll apply to a later question. Sorry. Go ahead. Number two.
Patriarchy is represented as bumbling, inept, and easily overcome. But that's satire, right?
That's exactly where my point is. No. Well, yes. But patriarchy is portrayed as that. So is the, I guess we'll call it before, matriarchy that existed before in Barbie Land.
Mm.
The whole thing is by the time Barbie gets back, it's been patriarchized and all the Barbies are into it. And the reason all the Barbies are into it is, well, the argument the movie makes is they essentially haven't been inoculated to patriarchy. So as soon as guys start spouting patriarchal bullshit, they just believe it. And that's a very glib, dumb explanation, but it's also the only way you can do it without making a movie that spans thousands of Barbie years. Consequently, the way to fix it is equally simple and stereotypical, although in my experience not 100% inaccurate. That's the thing, is we also have a finite system, so the things that happen in the Barbie movie to like get to a Barbie or get to a Ken and destabilize things, I think are legitimately things that sometimes women can and do to men. God bless you for it. And there's only X number of Kens. and Y number of Barbies. So if you do it that many times, you fixed society. In the real world, could a woman outsmart a man via the techniques they mention here? Yes. Could a bunch of women then overthrow the entire patriarchal system via those techniques? No.
Well, there's a precedent too. I mean, there are Greek plays where women use certain, I guess what we'd today call feminine wiles to outsmart men or whatever. It's a device.
Yeah.
It's not a suggestion for the real world.
And it's a lot of it is playing to egos.
Yeah.
A lot of it is pretending to be dumb. And then the guy steps in and likes you because he can teach you and you're willing to learn. And I not only know a lot of guys who will do that, I have been a lot of guys who will do that. And I have known women and have been women who use that technique to get the upper hand over guys.
Well, it's
valid option. Will it fix society? No.
I suppose they're like in what's that movie called? Greek Wedding, My Big Fat Greek Wedding or
Big
something?
Big Fat Greek Wedding. Third one's coming out soon.
Woo-hoo. There's a line in there about how men are the head, but women are the neck. That idea, right? Being that we actually control everything just in more subtle ways. And I suppose there are feminists who would think that's a terrible message and not a message you want to perpetuate in any other thing. And so maybe this person feels like that's a message that's a damaging message that's put forward in this film. I don't know. It feels like a lot of these points are taking the whole thing way too seriously and over applying.
Well, and hoping for a movie that was never going to happen. Because I don't know, we'll potentially get to it, but let's go on to the next question.
The next one is unlike Ken, Barbie is portrayed as perfect.
Okay, yeah, which I addressed earlier. She's not, but she is specific. I mean, that's sort of the whole point, is that she's the imperfect Barbie, and that's what starts the whole chain of events. But it is because within the mythology, shit happening in the real world by the person playing with the doll can seep into the Barbie, which actually then makes it really weird. So that means the only person who had un-Barbie-like thoughts while playing with the Barbie was one person in the whole world. But, you know, that gets into a whole thing. Barbie Land obviously doesn't have the millions of Barbies that are out there and whatever. So, yeah, but we have addressed that. Go to four.
America Ferrera's speech represents real hardships women face, which contradicts the Barbie message that you can be anything, which, I mean, just because you can be anything doesn't mean you will be. I mean, that doesn't mean you won't have obstacles. It doesn't mean you won't. I think the point there is that you can. Maybe certain things will try to stop you, but the problem is that sometimes when people come up against obstacles, they think they internalize the obstacle, and you can't do that. You have to remember this obstacle is here. I'm not the obstacle. This is. So I can be anything, but I have to get through this obstacle and I have to not internalize it, or that's going to stop me. That's how I understand it.
I would argue that's the point of the movie is that Barbie has propagated this idea that women can be anything. And while that is technically not untrue, it is a saccharine and vapid message that ignores all the bullshit that is reality in patriarchy.
Right.
And that's the point of the film.
Yeah.
So.
But it's to say that you can be anything, that what you just said is true. Right. That's a oversimplification and it's saccharine and all that stuff.
It can be true. You technically can be anything.
Right.
But it's not a level playing field, and there's so many factors. And the argument is that Barbie, the company, the toy, has not dealt with any of that, has just been being like, you can be whatever you want. Yeah, go ahead. You know,
right.
Sort of the same thing where people say the American dream, anybody can come to this country, and if they work hard, they will be rich and successful. Same thing. Technically true, as long as this whole list of other things doesn't stop you.
Right.
And this whole list of other things will usually stop.
Yeah, usually.
And that's although, again, this movie is not, you could argue it's not nearly critical enough of Mattel, but this movie is actually somewhat critical of Mattel in a way that surprised me, given Mattel signed off on it.
I still say, though, that
fanciful and fantastic enough, though, that it makes it easier to ignore.
That even when those external things do stop you, it's very important for your mental health, I guess I should say, to not internalize that, to realize
that it's not about you. It's about what's going on.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
And the last one is male domination is overcome by feminine wiles. You also kind of.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it's.
But that's the conceit of the whole Barbie world thing.
And the gender hierarchy. The gender roles within our modern society, the patriarchal gender roles, do grant abilities to women. And that's the classic bullshit patriarchal argument, is essentially it's separate but equal, but it's men and women instead of black and white. It's like, oh, women have all these other things, and so it's, you know, you've got your things, we've got our things, and they're equal. No, they are not at all. But it is true. There are certain things within our society that women can do and that women can effectively use to influence situations and gain finite amounts of power that are just as problematic as the men's one.
Right.
But also it keeps them down.
Yeah. One thing that I've often said, and I tried to work this into some fiction I was writing too, which is, one can easily imagine a world where we have parity in, like, there's as many female legislators as there are male. There are many female CEOs, whatever. But for the women to get those positions, they have to do things very differently than the men, which means that if you're a certain kind of woman, you'll never get there. Now, to be fair, if you're a certain kind of man, you'll never get there either. But the point is, if to get to those places, you have to be a certain kind of man or a certain kind of woman, our work's not done, right? You know, you, for example, if we have parity in terms of sex, but they're, you know, we don't, non-heteronormative women aren't very well represented there, obviously that's a problem. Yeah. Or whatever, because it's not just about having people of proportional sex in different places. It's how you get there matters too. And if you have to conform to some particular way of being a woman or a man in order to reach a particular thing, that's a problem, because a lot of people aren't going to fit into those molds. And so what about them? I mean, they're going to be just as good at being president or being a CEO as anybody else, but they're going to be blocked from it because they don't conform to some sex or gender, whatever. Yeah.
And there's also the important distinction, and this plays less in movies because movies aren't, a character in a movie is not the same as a person in real life.
Right.
They mean more, they are saying more, they have a greater influence, a greater platform, etc. But institutional systemic issues and individual experiences do not one-to-one correspond. Institutionalized patriarchy is fucked up and it is awful, and in a lot of insidious ways it gives a tremendous amount of privilege to all men and takes away a tremendous amount of privilege from all women. That does not mean that there aren't women who have benefited and found power and gained influence and achieved happiness and fulfillment in this patriarchal system, using this patriarchal system. And it doesn't mean that there aren't men who have suffered greatly under this patriarchal system despite being men.
Right. But it's also true, I think, that today's patriarchy, at least in some places, I can't believe people can't look at our modern legislature and not be appalled by how few women are there.
This the same with race. I'm like, if you look at any reasonable statistics, you're like, explain that to me.
But there are some,
unless you want to say there's an intrinsic value, like and white people are better. Yeah, than, like, which hopefully,
but there are some areas of society that are letting where women are achieving parity or even doing a little bit, you know, they're even the majority, but we're in a phase right now where it's only letting certain women in. Right. Women who follow certain rules, who meet certain standards, and women who don't, even a little bit, they're not going to get that high. They won't.
But to pull from a friend being racist unintentionally years ago, there are also white guys who, for example, apply for research grants, and they are definitely qualified, but there was another person applying for it who was roughly equally qualified, who was a woman, who was a person of color, something like that. And they got it. And the tipping point was that, because they were like, we want more representation. That does suck for that one white dude. And it is arguably not fair to him. And it is arguably not necessarily untrue when he says some dumb shit like, if I was black, I would have gotten it. That could be true. The problem is we're operating a society here. And in this society, 1,000,000,000 other white guys already got there and got all the shit. And in our attempts to redress it, I'm afraid you're a casualty of it.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, anyone who's ever been in a position like that, like I've been, to hire somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
It always comes down to like 3 or 4 people who are all equally qualified. It's all other things are equal.
Yeah.
And when that happens, whatever decision you make is completely arbitrary.
Yep.
So why not? If you decide, well, we don't have very many women working here, let's make it a woman, or we don't have very many people of color working, why not do that? If it's going to be, if all other things are equal, everyone, it's just, you're just going to be flipping a freaking coin anyway. Yep. And you know that you don't have a lot of representation of a particular group who might have a unique perspective to offer. Well, then that actually makes it not equal, because this person can bring something that the other people can't.
Yeah.
So that's not racist or sexist.
People who want to be fair, and their version of fairness is, I would love to find a way for all the disenfranchised people to get up to my level of privilege. I don't want to lose any privilege, though. I just want everybody else. And it's like, yeah, if we could have done that, we would have done that in the first place.
Well, like, I guess sort
of the nature of privilege is somebody has to not have it for it to be privilege.
I suppose. I mean, if you mean one of those people in that all other things being equal doesn't get privileged, yes, that's true. But I mean, but
that's what I mean is it can't be. I don't like the white people who essentially want to stop racism by saying, we'll just treat everybody the way I'm treated. Like, that doesn't always work. We want to treat everybody equitably, but we're living in a scarcity. We're like sometimes somebody's not going to get everything they want. And if we want to make things equitable, sometimes that person is going to be a white dude. It would be great if we were in a situation where we could give everybody everything they want. We can't. Currently, we sometimes can't give people what they want. And currently, we disproportionately don't give what they want to people who are of different color or who are poor or who are women. And if we're going to fix it, sometimes a wealthy white dude is not going to get what he wants.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, oh, that's unfair. That's reverse racism. Nope.
Well, yeah, certainly it's not that in a circumstance like I was just saying. Whatever choice you make is going to be arbitrary. Exactly, so exactly. Why should it benefit constantly the same type of person? That doesn't make any sense. But it does often. So, you know, make a different choice.
But that's the thing is it's not like, oh, we're just going to do it on merits. No, you're talking about in an applicant situation. It's like all of these are good. Trish dealt with this constantly when she was hiring people because there are a lot of factors. This person has the most skills already. This person in the interview seemed like a good fit for the team. this person, basic shit. They would ask questions in interviews, and if that person never said, I don't know, she didn't want them, because it showed a lack of willingness to admit you don't know and then be able to learn. Things like this. So many weird other things. Yep. But yeah, well, if it's arbitrary, then, you know, do it to that. And then they're like, but that's not fair to me. I'm like, I mean, it's sort of not fair to anybody.
That's right.
But this time it's not fair to you. And you're shocked because before it's always been fair to you.
And that's, again, most of the time, I mean, people like to pick on things where someone who was less qualified got something, I don't know, a minority, what is some kind of a token hire or whatever. People like to pick on that. But the fact of the matter is the vast, vast, vast majority of the time someone's hired, there's three or four people, and like you just said, it's not that they're all the same, because one person might be valued for this and another person might be valued for that, but the person would be perfectly happy with any of these three people.
Yes. There is no clear distinction in level of hireability.
No, but you don't, to me, like if I'm hiring one of these three people, what I don't want it to be based on is which person looks the most like me, you know, or which one's the guy, because I'm a guy and I'm going to get, I mean, that's a thing that humans do when they don't have any other criteria to pick from.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that. So don't, you know, think a little bit about what might benefit more than just you.
In this day and age, I am not as big a fan as I used to be of quoting Jon Stewart. But I will say, and the context in which he used this doesn't matter, because I think it is quite universal to everyone in a position of privilege. Whereas I believe the words were, you're confusing persecution with not getting everything you want.
Yeah, that's so weird when people do that.
But it's also understandable. So weird. If you spent your whole life getting what you wanted,
I mean, yeah, you would think
that was normal. When you're not, you're like, a grave injustice has happened.
It's like, I mean, that's true. That's true.
If you, it's possible a grave injustice has happened, but that only works if you admit that all this other shit out here were millions and millions of grave injustices to all of these people. So what we're doing is we're redistributing the grave injustices so they're a little more brown. And it can suck for the person who gets it. And that's the thing. I absolutely believe that attempts to make society more equitable have fucked up the lives and livelihoods of certain straight white men. Very few. And frequently, it probably is offset by a bunch of other things that they got.
That's what I'd say too, yeah.
Sometimes in the attempts to stop fucking over the same people over and over again, sometimes when you don't have enough to go around, the person on the short end of the stick is going to be a person who previously never had to deal with that end of the stick. He said, really choking that metaphor. We are so over time and I have to pee so bad. But I do want to say, since we've done the light spoilery of Barbie movie, I'm just going to put this out here. The Barbie movie starts with a very clear, I don't want to get into the effectiveness at the moment. The Barbie movie starts out very clearly trying to attempt a feminist message and a message about women and the oppression of women in our society. At a certain point, the movie transfers into being about how bad gender roles are in society. And by the end of the movie, it is about the vagaries and foibles and difficulties of being a human being. And this is a thing that happens in mainstream movies. If it had stuck on the, as several women who have seen the Barbie movie have said to me, essentially, why couldn't we just have one movie that was just about us and our thing? And that's what happens. As it goes on, it becomes less and less about women's situation and becomes more universal, which I think gives it broader appeal and makes people probably like it better. And none of it's untrue, but it really dilutes what seemed like a fairly powerful message at the beginning, which is again why I say I love this movie. It is a great movie. It is not all things to all people. It is not a perfect film. It is not a perfect feminist film. It mostly is one of those where I'm just glad it is out there and it is being talked about and is being enjoyed and appreciated by a large swath of people. It is something that will help bring up. This is not a movie for you and I to learn something. This is a movie for a lot of other people to learn things who maybe have a long way to go in learning about social injustice and things like that.
Do you think there's a problem with people who look at the movie and notice, like you, that it's not perfectly feminist, and because it's not a feminist in the way they want it, they say it's not feminist at all?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think it's an absolute.
Yeah.
I would. I'm sure I could. But there are very few movies out there that I would successfully say are not feminist at all. Face Off is one. Definitely. Definitely. But no, of course not. Of course not. Now, does it make some claims that are very not feminist? Yes. Does it make some claims that are arguably feminist and then undercut them later? Yes. Again, show me a movie that doesn't.
Yeah.
This is not and first and foremost, this is an entertainment piece. This is not a political discourse.
Well, it's also
it's a very funny comedy.
It's a satire and a farce and all those things. I mean, there's some expectations that I think are a little unreasonable.
People want to do this. People want to say it's either the new feminist messiah or it's just more bullshit patriarchy. And the answer is no, it's neither of those. Yeah. It's a surprisingly progressive, surprisingly feminist film for being a big Hollywood blockbuster
that has pretty broad appeal
and has got a lot of people who I don't think were talking about this shit before talking about this shit.
Right.
There's a rash online of people who are women who are breaking up with their boyfriends over this movie in two different forms. One being they see it and it makes them realize some things and they break up with their boyfriend, but the other is their boyfriend like is real pissy about not wanting to go see it or whatever. And they're like, wow, if this is that big of a problem for you, yeah, fuck off. And I love both of them. I love that that's happening.
Especially in those cases, I'll bet they're always going to movies with him that they don't want to see. I'll bet it
right.
Always. And he can't go to this one. Yeah. That would be a problem.
I love it. And I'm talking about it with people with whom I don't normally talk about feminism. Young people, I went with young people who I think really need to learn a lot of stuff, and I think they got some great messaging out of this that they didn't have before. It's doing some great stuff, and it's a very entertaining and funny movie.
And it can do all that without being its flaws. It can do all that without being perfect.
Yeah, and it's got flaws that I think are very mainstream. As Trish said afterwards, what's the stuff Greta Gerwig wanted in the movie that Mattel said no to? Because there absolutely has to be some. And I'm amazed at all the stuff Mattel said yes to. But there definitely had to be some things they said no to.
Mattel has a lot of women on their board, so I wonder if that...
And it is more progressive and more feminist than I thought it was going to be, or even that I hoped it was going to be. It is absolutely not more progressive and feminist than I would like it to be.
Right.
But virtually every single piece of media ever falls into that category, and very few fall into the more than I hoped it.
Yeah,
that's a very big few one. And this one was so that's what that is. All right, if you haven't seen the Barbie movie, go do it. Go to the blog, tell us your thoughts on it. I want other people's thoughts on it. I am really enjoying hearing and learning about other people's experiences having seen the Barbie movie. I was going to say, even if they don't like it, but so far I have yet to encounter anybody who doesn't like it. But even if they have a different experience than I do. I find it very interesting. And so please go to the blog, magicstonghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on that. Also, how many times has the fact that you are a straight white man screwed you over in this liberal agenda gone mad world that we live in now? How's that work for you? Also, emails again. This was our last email, so give us some more. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, we'll be back next week, and it'll have been 2 weeks for us. So we got to get real tight in making sure we don't. We're very bad at time management in general, but especially when we've skipped a week. So I'm not going to do anything to work on that, but William, you should.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.